From the Archives of the Key West Literary Seminar, 2008. This is Hannah Pittard reading The Year Helen Turned 41.
First, I just want to thank Anne and Miles for bringing me down here. And this is a story called The Year Helen Turned 41. The year Helen turned 41, she developed bronchitis and fell in love. He was tan, wore shorts in the winter, and had fantastically large calves. He rode a bicycle to which he attached his few possessions by way of a plastic grocery bag and looked about 10 years older than Helen. He was devastatingly aloof. During this year, the park near Helen's home put up its first construction sign, indication that it would soon be gutted and rebuilt. It was the last of the city's old playgrounds, the one with the colorless merry-go-round from which a now paralyzed 7-year-old had been thrown the Thanksgiving before last, the one to which only the most unscrupulous of babysitters brought their wards during the day, though their employers strictly forbade them. After the first sign had been posted, though she'd never before been tempted by it, Helen took to frequenting the park late at night. She enjoyed taking tallies of its daily changes, whether or not the construction crew had cleaned up after itself, if they hadn't, whether they'd all eaten the same fast food or different, whether the baby blue 76 Catalina had finally been towed or remained in the neighboring parking lot, whether or not the park's loan bench was missing yet another slat, whether high school students were still throwing their beer cans in the public trash cans or had found other hiding places, whether the trash cans were still being emptied regularly or had been abandoned by the city. At the park, Helen sat on the bench near the parking lot, away from the swing set and jungle gym, and it was there, very late at night, that the man she now loved first sat next to her. They did not speak the first night, but he turned up at the park 3 more times that same week. He nodded when he sat down, and Helen nodded back. The following week, he appeared 4 nights straight. Helen smiled first, but he was quick to smile back. The next week, he didn't come at all. Helen sat very still and listened to the late-night bats. The man returned a week later and began joining her at least 3 nights out of every 7. Helen was always the first to arrive, and he was always the first to leave. She began saying hello when he arrived. He said good night when he left. After a month of sitting next to him, Helen brought a brown paper bag to the park, which she placed next to where she sat on the far end of the bench. Inside the paper bag, which Helen had packed specifically for the man, was a sandwich and an apple. That first night, she packed chicken salad, though a night since, she sometimes packed peanut butter and jelly. She had tried once or twice packing fancier foods, leftover stroganoff and a slice of pie, roasted chicken and cubed melons. But on those nights, the man hadn't eaten, and though he always took the paper bag with him when he left, Helen had strong suspicions that he threw away the contents. And so she kept the food simple and able to be eaten by hand, and put her effort instead into affectionately and painstakingly wrapping the sandwiches in wax paper on her kitchen counter, the edges as tidy as a hospital bed. Nightly, she walked to the park, placed the bag next to her, and waited. There were nights when the paper bag went untouched and the man never came. There were nights when he came, ate, and left. And there were, even with the contents of the bag as basic as possible, nights when the man came, sat, inspected the bag, but did not eat. On the first night that he did not eat, he opened the bag, inspected it, unwrapped and rewrapped the sandwich, pushed a fingernail into the apple's skin, but did not eat. Helen decided she was in love. On the night that he next did not eat, she held out her hands and waited until he placed one of his atop both of hers. Slowly, lovingly, silently, she began with the base of his palm, rubbing it with her thumbs, her fingers offering a delicate table on which his hand might rest. On this night, and every night since, she took as many as 15 minutes with one palm alone, pushing her thumbs from the base to the top, working horizontally across the miraculous square that was his hand. Though it happened very rarely, what Helen waited and wished for was the slight shudder of enjoyment that accidentally made its way from the back of his throat across his tongue and out his loosely parted lips. Some nights, massaging his palm, she allowed her gaze, though not her concentration, to stray from her lap where his hand rested. Directly ahead was the gray Episcopalian church, which doubled during the day as a homeless shelter where Helen had not once considered volunteering. At night, the church took precautions to maintain its hallowed aura by leaving illuminated certain stained glass windows on the upper floors. Likewise, a tastefully muted set of spotlights surrounded its tiny stone steeple. To the left of the bench was the actual playground, the seesaw, swinging gates, and suspension bridges, the swing set, slides, merry-go-round, and basketball hoop, its net long torn away. To the right was a downward expanse of grass that led to the playground's parking lot with its newly installed street lamp. The bulb in this lamp was stronger than the others in their town. And finally, immediately above the bench, was the moon, which, depending on its phase, was sometimes visible between the break in the magnolia branches overhead. Though the view of the moon pleased Helen, as did the view of the church and even of the parking lot and the basketball hoop, what pleased her most was the man's hand. And so her gaze always returned there, to her lap, where his hand rested delicately in hers. When she had finished with the palm, when she had traced butterfly wings and all nine planets and each of the palm's lines, life, head, heart, health, fate, fame, marriage, money, sex, spirit, travel, and luck, when she had rubbed and smoothed until she thought she might lose feelings in her thumbs forever, Helen moved to his fingers. There were summer nights when the no-see-ums would assault her legs and neck, tempting her to stop. There were nights when actual June bugs landed on her blouse, crept through her hair, taunting and teasing her devotion, when deer ticks migrated along her forearm, where they paused to dig their heads in one by one, when roaches scaled her toes. And there were nights in early fall when Helen was positive that mother rats were making nests for their babies in her thick brown hair, when she believed she could feel the bronchitis itself creeping up her legs for safety, up her legs, past her underwear, over her stomach, around her breasts, out the collar of her blouse, and into her nostrils. But she never gave in to the discomfort, the itch, the bite, the tickle, the cough. She never once moved her hands from his, afraid that any unexpected movement would break the spell, sending her man back to his bicycle and away into the night. "I have a home to go to," she said one night, having finished with the first hand. "You should go there," he said, though neither had moved until the second hand had been cared for, each of its joints gently cajoled between Helen's thumb and index finger. When the massage was finished, the man took back his hands, rose, and left. His departure on this night, as on every other, was abrupt and unceremonious, though not unkind. Helen never asked him to stay longer. She never asked where he was going. She never invited him back to her house. And only after he had mounted his bicycle, only after he had ridden away into darkness, never in the same direction as the previous night, only then did Helen leave the bench and the rundown playground. It wasn't a safe playground for children during the day. It was likewise unsafe for women at night, night in general being especially unsafe for women in this city. But Helen never once deviated from her prescribed schedule. Nightly, he would leave her breathless, and nightly she would leave the park alone, her chest just a little bit hotter, her limbs clammy and weak, and walk back the five blocks to her house, where she would prepare her own sandwich, the same as whatever she'd made for him just before midnight. She would go so far as to wrap it in wax paper with the same flawless hospital edges, and she would wipe the counters free of crumbs and put away whatever condiments she had used before taking her perfectly packaged sandwich into the dining room, where she unfolded it and ate it bit by bit, postponing her bedtime ever so slightly, trying to fantasize that at that same moment he might be eating the rest of his sandwich somewhere nearby. Bitter every night that she was always too aware to fully entertain this or any other fantasy. Afterwards, she would wrap her neck with a small red heating blanket and climb into bed with a stomach full of food. Towards the end of winter, the 76 Catalina was towed. A night or two later, Helen shared the playground with a group of high schoolers. They stood on the seats of the swing set and jumped one at a time into darkness. They did not acknowledge her, and she did not acknowledge them. A week later, yellow caution tape surrounded the park. Helen had to duck under it to get in. Another 2 weeks and the construction crew was no longer leaving its lunchtime trash behind. A spotlight had gone out around the church's stone steeple. Though the man no longer joined her at the bench, she returned nightly, always with a freshly packed brown paper bag. She took to rubbing her own thighs these last few weeks, her hands restless without activity. The public trash cans overflowed with empty beer cans. On a Thursday morning in early spring, Helen City leveled its most dangerous playground. There was no fanfare, of course, not only because of the terrible threat it posed to the city's youth, but because it was, quite frankly, an eyesore where only the dirtiest of the town's riffraff and pickpockets congregated. That night, Helen, tempted though she was to bake a tiny lasagna that might have fit very nicely in a paper bag, made a chicken salad sandwich, wrapped it tidily in wax paper, and walked to the barren playground. She waited where the bench had been. She waited with the paper bag at her side. She waited while a corn snake slinked across her lap, while late-night moths entered her blouse through the keyhole at her neck, while the whippoorwills shouted to each other overhead. She waited even as a tiny coyote made its way gingerly, pausing every three or four steps, sniffing, nose first to the ground, then to the sky, to within an arm's distance. And she watched as the coyote nosed the paper bag. And when the coyote looked up at her, longingly, she thought, she did the only thing she could think to do. She opened the bag, removed first the apple and then the sandwich. The coyote whimpered. He nudged her elbow with his nose. It was cold and wet. He pushed her elbow upwards, and she unwrapped the sandwich as delicately as she had wrapped it, retracing her folds step by step, following her creases exactly. The coyote opened his mouth and let out a larger sound, something more guttural. Now the coyote drooled, and Helen tossed the sandwich a little away from her. The coyote went to the sandwich, nosed it, pawed it, then took it between his teeth and brought it back to Helen's side. He lay down next to her in the spot where her man once sat and ate the sandwich. When he finished, he rolled onto his side so that his back was touching Helen's thigh, and Helen, not knowing what else to do, rested her hand on the inside of the coyote's belly. It was warm. They stayed this way for some time. The coyote moaned, and Helen moved her thumb under his leg. She dragged her fingers from his chin down to his pelvis. She worked her hand up, gripping in strong circular motions, back to his chin. The coyote rolled fully onto his back, and Helen adjusted her body so that she could use two hands now, using not only fingers and the base of her palm, but also her knuckles to feel for the animal's bones, its vessels, its muscles, such miraculous muscles. After many, many minutes, after Helen had kneaded every surface of the coyote's body, felt his scabs and wounds and ticks, she said, "I have a home to go to." The coyote rolled back onto his stomach. He looked at her, prodded her elbow with his wet, icy nose. She thought for a moment he might have understood. "I'm sorry," she said, and closed her eyes. "I'm tired tonight." The coyote opened his mouth, put it shyly around Helen's forearm. She wondered what she tasted like, the lotion and salt on her skin. The coyote's tongue felt warm and thick on her elbow. He loosened his jaw. Helen opened her eyes. They looked at one another, Helen thinking of nothing at all. The animal stood, turned away, and with a sort of slow skip, ran sideways into the woods. For many minutes, Helen stayed cross-legged on the ground. In front of her was the untouched apple, the wadded-up wax paper, the empty paper bag. The coyote had left not even a crumb of the sandwich behind. Above her, a gibbous moon made clear the emptiness of the playground. The seesaw was gone, as was the merry-go-round in the jungle gym, and of course, the bench was also gone. She looked up at the night sky and tried hard to imagine, as so many times she had been taught to imagine as a child, a thousand other people, a million other people looking up at that very moment, seeing the same sky, though from a slightly different angle, experiencing the same feelings, thinking the same thoughts. She tried very hard to become not one, but many, to find comfort in her common sorrow. But as hard as she tried to unfold herself into the universe, she felt only the familiar pain in her chest, only that singular love for her man. She stood. Far away in the woods to her right, she heard the lone, stark cry of a coyote, a howl as if to say, "I am here and this place is mine." Impossible that it would be her coyote. And yet, Helen closed her eyes. She was aware of the dried stickiness of the animal's saliva on her forearm. The coyote howled again, and Helen, her throat dried up with so much longing, let out a tiny cough. Thanks.